you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon the stage, every foul wicked spirit is the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of a on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into the adversarial kind
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now on to our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downey, aka Beast Zeno, and with me in the air is my co-host, The Dark Pool. Matt, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing real well, man. Sitting here with my normal Saturday cup of coffee. I'm outside for a change. It is beautiful. It is sunny. And ready to do this.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with you. We were having some really nice weather here right now, too. It's just a little over 83 degrees. And there's a nice sea breeze coming in, and the sun's shining down warm on the ground, so I guess you could say we've got a beautiful day going on here, too. So I wonder if that's a... I'm sorry, go ahead, man.
Oh, no, I'm just saying awesome, man. You know, one coast to the next coast, it's awesome weather. It's everything in between that concerns me.
Yeah, right on. Well, today's topic was suggested by you, so I'm going to kind of let you get us started on whatever we're talking about. But before we do that, I just want to quickly throw out a couple of plugs. You know, I want all of our listeners to check out some of the latest artwork that Jason Sorrell has been posting on creativeoddity.com. I don't know if all of our listeners are familiar with Jason or not. He's one of our co-hosts, so they should be. But do they really know who he is beyond the fact that he's an occult writer and a semi-celebrity occult personality?
And do some people even know what that is? You know, if he has that under his belt. So that's also on his website as well, right?
Yeah, that's also on his website as well. You can check out absolutely everything. You can check out absolutely everything that happens in Jason Sorrell's life on creativeoddity.com. So that's my shameless plug for our co-host Jason Sorrell today. With that in mind, let's kind of go right after the One God Current. So how do you want to start this out?
Well, first of all, I think we're all, pretty much anybody who's listening to the show is familiar with, you know, God, the concepts of God. But the term, the One God Current, was more aptly named or aptly coined by Jason King in his book Postmodern Satanism. And pretty much it encompasses a force that, in my eyes, I mean, I'll go into more detail later, but in my eyes, it's a very oppressive force, very much, you know, forces one to be subservient and all that stuff. And, I mean, you could see it in most major religions, especially Western ones like Judaism, Christianity, Islam, etc.
Right on. I honestly don't know if it the idea itself was developed with the notion of submissiveness or what word did you just use? Oppression. The idea that I find in my mind of why the One God religion developed and then maintained its stronghold like it has is the fact that people have a real difficult time rationalizing the fact that everything that they do, and I mean everything they do, bears some form of consequences, whether they're negative or positive or indifferent. There's a consequence to every action. There is a effect for every action. No action can be taken without an effect actually happening. And what's really fascinating to me is that this gives some kind of a constant parental, if you know what I mean. There's this constant thought that there is something that's greater than you that's going to smack you down if you do something that's outside of what it considers to be correct at that point in time.
Right, and absolutely. In fact, the whole concept started out, well, if you really want to go back, you can go all the way back to Egypt. It started out with Akhenaten when he, you know, pretty much dissolved all the temples and said, you know, there's only one god, and that's Aten. But that's going way far back. I mean, the whole parental figure didn't really step in until Judaism.
Well, I don't know about that. See, my understanding of ancient mythology and pre-Judeo-mythology is that certain groups of people, small little tribes, generally only had one big god. They might have little gods that personified that big god, but that big god was, you know, it was still there. You know, they were Baal worshippers, or they were Set worshippers, or they were whatever worshippers. They always had some kind of archetype, and this is where I don't actually disagree with the ideas that are presented in theism, because we can learn a lot about the human brain by
right, and the human condition, especially pre-scientific.
Yeah, so what I'm getting at here is that they had to, and I've talked about this in connection in other shows, but that they had to kind of do a psychological projection to ensure that the people who wouldn't hold themselves accountable would have some kind of fear of a punishment or a consequence coming out of their actions. This is, you know, of course, purely my speculation, my opinion, and it's based on my understanding of what has transpired historically. What's fascinating to me is prior to the development of a one god, you see these versions of pantheism, or I don't know what other way you would want to describe it, but where there's always this like head god, this head figure, and then there were all these other miniature gods and stuff, and that kind of actually was preserved in the Judeo-Christian philosophy. It just broke down. Instead of being all of them were gods, you know, one was a god and the others were, I don't know, archangels or cherubs,
yeah,
or whatever the fuck it is. But the neat thing about it is, in our quest to understand something, the world around us, we ascribed attributes that we found in ourselves to these objects, which is how we come up with this I always have trouble saying that word.
Anthropomorphized?
Anthropomorphical beings. You know, the fact that it was an actualized or conceptualized being, it shows, it's a reflection of how the human brain actually learns, that we place attributes that we can identify with in ourselves onto external objects, and that's how we discover what something really is. We can look at it and go, well, it is this, but it has this quality, and it has that quality, or it doesn't have this quality or that quality.
Right, and they attribute all of these qualities to anthropomorphized gods. I mean, the earliest ones, like I said, when we talk about the Egyptians, you see that in animals, and you see human characteristics put in inanimate things.
Right, well, you go beyond...
Well, not so much inanimate, excuse me, not so much inanimate, but things that carry different qualities. You know, for example, like vigilance, human vigilance could be ascribed to the dog, you know, guarding... you know, the afterlife, you know, for example, Anubis.
Sure, but again, it still comes down to we've placed human characteristics on that dog.
Right, a projection.
And we've projected immediately onto the concept of this dog guarding, and we can identify with the ideas that are presented within it, and then we're able to, from there, kind of build upon the conceptualization of this. So it's really quite fascinating how it's come out. I myself have never held a one God belief ever. Even in my youth, as far back as I can remember, when I was, you know, a Baptist by default, you know, my family makes you go and
right.
teach you all about Jesus and all that stuff. I always kind of felt like I could look in the world around me and everything I saw was God. So I always had this pantheistic view. So it's very difficult for me to really give a true analysis of what it is, because I and myself have never been able to experience that feeling. But,
right, and me, I'm the opposite end of the spectrum. I was in my youth a Christian, you know, and the whole crisis of faith thing, and here I am, you know. That's one hell of a bridge, you know. That's one hell of a paraphrase, but yeah, I mean, seeing it up close and personal in my youth, you know, growing up with it, you know, I've sort of known the characteristics literally inside and out. So, coming from that kind of background, you know, it's interesting because you see it one way. You know, obviously, when I said it's an oppressing force, I meant that it's oppressing insofar as you look at it from a left-hand path perspective.
Yeah, I know what you were getting at with that, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, but what I'm saying is that the actual philosophy itself is not intended to be an oppressive thing, but rather because it is based on, critical thinking that wasn't developed correctly.
But see, we're talking about one aspect of it at this point. We're talking about, you know, the Christian aspect, but the one God also carries over into, like, Islam.
Sure, sure. I know that. And I know we're going to get into that, which is kind of why I'm refining what I've made as a statement so far, just to kind of develop what I'm saying into where we're getting to on this. The ideas there were not intended to be something that would be used to I don't know, push you down into the muddy water, but rather something to give you a measure to govern yourself with. And what happened was somebody along the lines eyebrow raised and they went, wait a minute, this is a very good way to manipulate the situation to my own personal benefit.
Exactly.
And so from there, as this one God continues to develop in concept, more and more things that people have pet peeves with, you know, people of power had pet peeves with, develop into you shouldn't do this, or a man should not lay with another man, or this, that, you know, all of these
right.
things.
And it became a form of control. And, you know, I always date all of this back to Egypt. I mean, really, that's where we see, I mean, there are obviously earlier roots, but that one is more the most solidified if you really go back and examine this. In Egypt, you know, one of the common traits, you know, for example, there were two gods, there was Amun and there was Ra. And they would take, you know, at one point when they figured out, hey, you know, religion could be used to manipulate the masses. I mean, at that point, you had a pharaoh who was a political figure as well as a god. You know, you can't get more, you know, power hungry than that, and or more powerful for that matter. And what they did in order to unify Upper and Lower Egypt was they, you know, they combined the two gods Amun and Ra, and they made Amun-Ra. And in a similar sense, when you fast forward many years later to the Council of Nicaea, you know, you got the same thing going on. You got people agreeing, like, okay, well, we've got these pet peeves, you know, we've got these arguments, these philosophical arguments and these holes. How can we solve them? What books need to be stricken from the Bible? What needs to be put in? So it came to an agreement in order to control the masses.
Right, right. I absolutely agree with that. It's somewhere along the line, somebody decided that people needed a person in charge of them, and that person couldn't be in charge of them and share all the same qualities as them, so they somehow had to be above them. So this is, I think, you know, where the idea of the pharaoh being a god comes from, and the idea of a king being ordained by the god, or his bloodline being chosen by God to you know, rule comes from. And I don't know. I'm just at a real standstill in that, you know, I no longer hold on to any kind of adversity to the Christian religion or theism or of any kind. You know, my reactionary stage is long gone. I identify and understand with why people are doing things, and even though I may personally feel that it's a flawed view, the only thing that I can really do is try to enlighten them.
And that's very admirable, and I think that's one of the main ways to go, really. I mean, one of the main ways to go. I can't stress that enough. But you can only enlighten those who are willing to listen, you know. And the reason why I still hold, I guess you could say, a grudge like I do is because, not necessarily because of, like, situations in my life, per se, but more so because that mentality is still prevalent, and it is restricting people who would generally want certain freedoms. You know, one of the examples is, you know, prohibitions, for example. When the Christians tried prohibition in the 30s, it didn't work, and we created Al Capone because of it. You know, now you've got, you know, like, it's not nearly to that degree, but we still have that lingering in the sense that marijuana is not legalized. And even though I myself am not a great big pot user, you know, I think it can only be beneficial if you legalized it. But you have to get rid of that mentality first.
Right, I understand what you're saying. I'm trying to think of this in terms. The example's nice, but what I think the overall thing is that when we put together a set of undesirable characteristics in a broad sense of the social spectrum, if it's not immediately attached to some, I don't know, mythological entity, then what happens is the devil personifies anyway. So, you know, again, that goes to the prohibition producing Al Capone. It was an opportunity for the devil to personify.
Right.
It's very curious how that kind of occurs. It's like you almost have to have that happen in order for anything to really move forward, if it even really does move forward. So,
right now, returning back to the God current and what, you know, the one God current and what it all encompasses. Is not only, I mean, from a left-hand path perspective, we can see that it is somewhat oppressive, you know, but if you look at it from someone within that paradigm, it's like, okay, it's obviously, you know, a contrast between quote-unquote selflessness and selfishness. You know, you see people that are laying their lives down for something that they believe, you know, for a moral guideline, a moral code, and that's admirable. But, you know, again, things change, you know, things change with time. You know, what was true back in the day is not necessarily true now. I mean, and that's another form of stagnation, is that while they see themselves as doing something for the greater good, what they're really doing is setting things backwards in time. I mean, and,
right.
And it's no more prevalent than in Islam.
Yeah, I would agree with that entirely. And what's actually very interesting about Islam as your demonstration is the fact that technologically, on the larger scale, and educationally on the larger scale, a lot of the problem, a lot of the repressive mentality that has evolved there has been directly due to the fact that the education that people receive is very limited because their perception is that there's only one true book.
Right.
I guess.
And I'm not discounting, by the way, I'm not discounting that there are other, that there are not other factors involved, such as poverty. You know, I'm not discounting that at all. But yeah, again, with what you said about, you know, the best way to is to enlighten the masses. I mean, that's what they need. They need enlightenment.
Right on. They do. And I don't even know necessarily that they need enlightenment. I think that enlightenment itself is something you come to when you've been given all of the information.
Right.
It's like that realization when you're, I don't know if you've ever like had a problem, an overheating problem in your car. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, the first thing that you look at is the radiator almost always, right? I mean, you check to make sure the fan's running on it. You make sure there's water. You look to see if there's any leaks or damage to the actual integrity of the radiator. And then after that, you might check the water pump out and see what's going on. And then what happens is as you narrow down what it is not, you come to this point where you realize what it is. And that, in my opinion, is the state of enlightenment.
Right. And another factor, too, I would like to examine is that there are other countries. There are other, like, Arab countries. Turkey, I think, you know, has some, has Islamic, has a certain Islamic population. And they're enlightened. The difference is that their government, you know, like I said, there are other factors involved, but their government allows this influx of knowledge. They allow people to be more free.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. That is a difference. The allowment of people to be free gives them the ability to pursue the things that would enlighten them. Now, the unfortunate downside to this is that the human condition dictates that just because you have the freedom to do something doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to. And so what we kind of... what we've kind of come to is the problem that, although oppressive, systems like this ensure the greater survival of the whole in terms of the social organism itself. Somewhere along the line, somebody decided that it's better to be many than one. And we've kind of stuck with that premise, you know, rather than being a completely hermetic species, we are a socially acclimated species.
Right, and you get when you get that kind of mentality, you also get a mob mentality. You know, the more people you add, the more social pressure it is to conform with the rest of the group.
Right. And so, anyway, I think that we're really kind of moving away from the one God current and discussing aspects that are inherently human, instead of dealing with the one particular factor, although I realize...
Well, that's good, because the human factor is obviously what created this in the first place.
Right, I agree with that. The problem is that there's no real... Aside from encouraging people to educate themselves, to look into things, there's no real cure for the negative qualities that come with the one God current.
Right. And again, addressing some of these qualities, there's a huge pull on like abstinence, you know, abstain from, you know, things that would be somewhat beneficial. I mean, this is nowhere more prevalent than in, for example, like the Satanic Bible, where it says, you know, Satan represents all of the so-called sins because they all lead to physical, mental, and emotional gratification. Now, I mean, you see the exact opposite of that in the one God current. You see people abstaining just for the sake of abstaining because, again, it's moral and it's righteous. But if you'll notice, I mean, it looks good on paper, but if you'll notice that human nature will always find a way, and that's why, for example, we see priest scandals, you know, molesting little boys.
Right. I wouldn't disagree with any of that. What's kind of curious to me, though, is why we put these abstinence clause or these prohibitions, but I'm trying to think of what the word would be. Would it be an embargo? Is that the word I'm looking for?
That makes sense. That makes sense, seeing as how you have kind of a middleman between what you want and controlling what you desire. Yeah, that's a good analogy for it.
Right. So, but what I'm getting at is, again, it comes down to the amount of information a person has and their ability to navigate themselves or negotiate themselves within reality. The idea of, you know, don't do all of these things, you know, abstain from sex till you're married. The concept there is pretty sound when you look at what the negative benefits could be by engaging in those things.
Right, and thinking about the times in which those rules were created.
Right, but here's the thing. Had there been more knowledge put onto it, they would have come to the realization that, there were things that you could do or put in place to limit the potential of these other things. A lot of it, I think, really stems from the idea that people don't have the ability to know when enough is enough, that when we begin to indulge in something, we immediately fall into a gluttonous or,
You know what? That is an excellent point, and that's definitely something I want to cover. The act of overindulgence. If you notice, a lot of people turn to religion after they fucked up. You know, they Marilyn Manson, I heard Marilyn Manson at one point, Disinfocon, referred to it as the God Band-Aid. You see this obviously prevalent in AA meetings, even though they're like, it's kind of like a non-denominational God. You see this applied, like, there are a majority of people that are addicts that don't know that balance, and that God is saying, this is the limit, helps to fulfill that balance. I mean, a lot of times, though, that's ignored, but that's a quality that I definitely see inherent in Christianity, is that a lot of the members that join willingly, not necessarily those that were born and raised, that's a different scenario altogether, but people that join willingly and just turn to God because of something that happened in their life, probably like a either a traumatic situation or a situation that they brought on themselves because they did not know when to stop. I mean, very much I've seen many addicts drawn into the current of the one God.
Yeah, well, it's because, again, they don't have the knowledge, the tools, the resources, or maybe even the ability at that moment. And I really believe that ability is built on having a few key components. To be able to do something, you must first know enough about it. Next, you must practice it because, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to do something right the first time. You know, you've got to make some mistakes. You've got to, learn, your own feel in it. It's just
right,
really
knowing a difference between knowing the path and walking the path, to quote from The Matrix.
Yes and no. Walking the path happens after you've known the path and you've, flirted with the path a little bit, meaning that, you've taken off your shoes and pushed your feet into the soil to feel the grass. You've maybe gone a little bit up there and smelled the flowers, and then you come back and you think about it. It's the examination and reaffirmation and building of confidence in your own ability to do something that creates the effectiveness of you doing it. So I don't know if I'm talking in circles there. I wanted to say ability twice there, but I realized that might come out a little wrong because you can't have the ability to do something until you have the confidence of the ability to do it, if that makes sense.
Well, the will to act, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess that's a fitting description of it. So, all right, what else? What else about the one God current?
Oh, let's see here. see, what else could be examined? Anthropomorphization. You're rubbing off on me, dude. Anthropomorphizing. Making things external. We've already covered that to a great degree. I think at this point it'd be safe to throw out the call-in number.
All right. 347-989-1371. There's something that's also, I don't know if it's inherently connected to the one God current, but it seems to be. It seems like every one God current produces some form of a messiah.
Someone who will save them from the trouble. It kind of goes into the parental that we have already discussed, but it differs slightly. You're right. There's the messiah. There's someone who's basically there to take all of the blame for humanity. And in pre-Christian cultures, you know, you had Celtics. They believed this to be like a, they had the concept of a sin eater, you know, somebody that would take the sins of the family or the person that died and eat it and take it onto themselves.
Right, and that's an actually perfect example of what it really is all about. It is not wanting to carry the burden of your actions, not wanting to carry those consequences, the refusal to want to deal with the fact that your actions directly result in what you're suffering through or what you will be suffering through. Kind of interesting because I want to tell you a story. I was about 7 years old, and I was still living at the time in a town called Northwood, Ohio. There is one major street in the town that I was in, and by major, what I mean is that it has three lanes on each side. There's one major street there. It was just outside of the neighborhood that I lived in. One of the kids that lived there, who was slightly older than me, asked me to ride with him to the gas station that was on the direct opposite side of that major street on my bicycle.
Whoa, okay, so that's some major jaywalking and some danger right there.
Right, I was riding a bike over and I was in danger. Well, what happened? We got all the way about up to the front of the neighborhood and we're beginning to start to cross that street when my parents caught me.
Oh.
And I was in deep shit because I was about to put myself into a majorly dangerous situation. And what my own personal reaction that happened, my own personal reaction that happened at that point in time is a perfect demonstration of what goes on. I could not accept the fact that this older kid asking me to go did not justify me going when I should have known better, that I was not old enough or understanding enough of what that major street was to be able to cross it safely. So I had trouble. I was actually grounded the entire summer, about 3.5 months in total, for this one act. But the reason that my groundation was so fierce was because of my refusal to accept the responsibility of my part in the events that were happening. That was a very tough thing to muster through as a child, and it's something that I think adults don't want to push themselves through. So
right, but again, there's that portion of, you know, of control that was because, you know, you did not know the limits, which is, you know, when we briefly discussed addicts not knowing the limits. I mean, that took another form in this scenario, but you know, it's for people that don't know that limit.
Right, and the old argument is always, well, if God doesn't dictate what's right, then who does? And, you know, that has, for years and years and years, been what has continuously perpetuated a lot of people to participate in the Christian or one God theology. Let's just throw it out there
right.
like that. So what I'm kind of getting at here is that our failure to realize that our actions bear consequences, and sometimes psychologically those consequences can be deeply tormenting. We need oftentimes that external thing to absolve us of the things that we feel bad for doing. In hindsight, we look at it and we go, I did this and that makes me a little more of a terrible person.
Right.
What I would actually like to do at this point, Matt, because I just feel like we might be framing...
Oh, I've got more. I've got more, my friend. Trust me.
Oh, I'm sure you do. But I feel like we might be framing
mm-hmm.
supporters of this one God current and strawmanning them. I want to invite anybody who supports the idea of the one God current, anybody who's participatory in that system, to call in and explain to me why I'm wrong on my analysis of this.
He's somewhat listening, I should have given him plenty of time, but Tim is hardcore. I'd like to call him out by name because he's the one Christian that's come into the left-hand path and has kind of just been there.
Right. The when I look at how the word God is defined, and then I look at how the concept of God is enacted on the world, I see a very big problem. The two do not match up.
Exactly. And that my theory as to that is the transference. You cut something off in one area, it's going to find a way in another.
Right on. So anybody with the experience that, or anybody who feels that I'm pointing this out incorrectly, if you don't get the chance while we're in live show today to call in, write me an email. I'll address it at the very next show. Tell me why I'm wrong, because I would really like to know. This is not a closed-minded.
Well, that's true. It's not closed-minded. At the same time, it helps to talk it out. And look at the other end of the spectrum. How often, to quote LaVey, or paraphrase LaVey, how often has the devil been persecuted and blamed and scapegoated for the wrongdoings of others, for their irresponsibility?
Right. We have a car, Matt, so I'm going to hold on. Hopefully this is going to answer my inquiry. So.
Okay.
Oh, nope. Caller dropped off. No, I know what it is. There we go. I got to reload. The show just kind of did a glitch thingy. The quality of Blog Talk Radio is starting to deteriorate again. So,
yippee.
Any takers on this? There we go. Yeah, here's the caller again. Caller, you're on the news.
Is this me?
623?
Yeah, who's this?
This is 623. You're right. It's Tim. Tim is hardcore.
All right. Welcome.
You know what? I had a chance to go somewhere else to a picnic today, and I said, nope, you guys are talking my game, so I stayed home.
Right on.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
No problem. I actually enjoy this show. I think it's really cool.
How are we? How do you feel we're negotiating the concept of the one God current? Do you feel we're doing an injustice to it?
Well, I think there is some assumptions you make, and that is the fact that there is some that we're somehow trying to take responsibility off. Now, I'm not saying that as a whole Christianity doesn't try to do that. I'm just saying that's not what's meant. Okay, that's my point. The fact is that there's a difference, and I've said this to some people before, and that is there's a difference between eternal consequences and earthly consequences of this. As Christians are going to, I will say I believe that there is a afterlife.
Right.
And so the idea of repentance and all that is simply about the afterlife. It's not about if I commit murder, and this was the argument I had with, I think it was Jack Winters, the simple fact that, no, God is not going to alleviate me from my from the murder that I committed here. In other words, I'll have to go through the judicial system and I will go. If it's death penalty, if it's whatever, I'll accept that. Okay, now granted, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I'd commit murder. But the point is that I would still be accountable for my actions here on earth.
Right,
but
right.
But we're talking about eternal consequences. There's a big difference in those two.
Right, and Tim, here's the only flaw that I see with what you're talking about, in that there would be no eternal consequences if you could just, you know, keep in mind that you have a responsibility to your actions here in life. You know, that if you understand what I'm saying, there's no sin that is relative to something that isn't already a transgression that'll cause you difficulty later in life, if you know what I'm saying, in our life.
On my end, you kind of break up just a little bit. Sometimes I don't hear exactly everything you said.
Okay.
Can you repeat that real quick?
Yeah, I sure would. What I'm getting at is that we need not be concerned with the eternal consequences, as you put it, because nothing that we do on earth that we don't already consider to be a negative behavior in terms of socially or psychologically exists that would be considered a sin and give you a negative mark in the afterlife, if you know what I'm saying. If you kill somebody here, you know, there are real world reasons why it's a very bad thing to do.
Yeah.
So it makes no difference in the fact that when you die, you're still going to have to deal with that, except for maybe in the threat of extending the consequences to the end of time. That's the only thing that I really see as a potential to argue with me on that. But do you understand what I mean now?
No, I understand. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, Jack Winters brought up that argument to me, and you know, after a couple of times, he kept saying, "Well, why doesn't God just leave it?" I just kind of said, "Never mind. He's just, you know, he's either playing games or he's, you know, it." And I understand what you're saying. You're right, but I think that once I understand the concept of why. You know, and I understand everybody. To me, it's a universal law. Don't commit murder. I'm not saying thou shalt not kill. So I think it's a universal law, and I'm not sure if that's where you're going. But, yeah, but I'm talking about a little thing, thou shalt not steal. You know, those things that I consider are, you know, to me, Christianity is a discipline. And all disciplines require something that we abstain from. I'll use this example. I've never seen a fat ninja. You know what I mean? So, in other words, he's disciplined to be able so he can do what he's got to do. So I'm just saying that there's disciplines involved in this, and those disciplines of thou shall not, if that's how we want to put it, do they have eternal? And I'll be honest with you, I'm not so keen on the afterlife anyway. I use it just simply as a Christian argument, but I'm not so keen on heaven, hell, and all those things. As you guys know, I've never made a video on those, but I'm just saying that there's a consequences in this action, in this life. Right?
Yeah,
but what we do affects. If I kill you, right, it could have an eternal consequence, only in the sense that you're not here. So whatever you would have done here is not going to be done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that.
And so I look at eternal as in that sense in and of itself, is that whatever I do on this earth has. If I drink and drive, I kill somebody, those people no longer are alive. Those people no longer can take care of kids. Those people no longer, so they have consequences that go far beyond just the incident itself.
But see, here's the inconsistency that I see prevailing, is that there's also the thought of a universal plan, and that conflicts with punishment and all that. I mean, if you are destined to kill TC and it was in God's plan, why should you be punished? Why should Judas have been punished?
Well, I think there's a difference between foreknowledge and predestination. I'm not a Calvinist, so I don't think that, you know, I don't really believe that God has this whole thing. I believe my life materializes before me as I take the steps. Even if God has been from the, you know, understands the end and knows it all, I'm still writing my own epistle. In other words, I'm still doing this. I don't think God made this plan. It says Tim's going to do this, 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 because I tell him to. I can make a mistake, even if, you know, if I'm supposed to be doing this and I make a mistake and do this, I don't think that God falls off the throne because I didn't do what he asked me to do or I didn't do what he thought I was going to do. I think there's a big, you know, I mean, I know there's people that think that way, but I don't think that my book's only written out in the sense that God is there from the beginning to the end. You know what I mean? So he does know everything, but I don't think he's sitting there writing it out for me saying, okay, Tim, this is what you're going to do because I tell you to.
Okay.
If I go this direction, you know, if that answers the question. So I don't.
Yeah, it does. But see, that also brings up like five more questions. You know, the whole subdivision, the whole subdivision within Christianity. I mean, like every religion or every path is going to have like, you know, subdivisions. You know, you're going to have different variations of one particular crystallized thing. You know, so I mean. You know, you get a lot of groups coming in there saying, you know, we're the only ones destined to get into heaven. You know, we're the ones destined because Joseph Smith was the prophet. No, we're the ones destined because, you know, Muhammad was the prophet. You know, and there's a whole bunch of chaos.
No, yeah, I think there's 30,000 different distinct belief systems, you know, with their own little creeds based upon, you know, the Bible itself. You know what I mean? You got your major ones, you got all your little ones, no doubt. It's amazing how one little sentence, you can take one sentence out of the Bible and you can make a whole religion off of it.
Right, absolutely.
You know, I mean, the Mormons do it, the Jehovah's Witnesses do it. I mean, you can do many things. And you're right. You know, I'm kind of like one of those guys, I've said this before, I probably make a better Satanist or adversarialist than I do a Christian, but I go over here because I see the goodness in it. I see how it can change for the better, or is that how it makes things better, or it makes my life better. I'll put it that way. I'll put it my life better. I'm a theocracy
now,
myself. Go ahead.
Now, Tim, I actually have a question for you. What's your take on the Gnostics and their view of the devil?
Before you answer that, Tim, I actually want to kind of throw in that I was just actually getting ready to asked Tim if he identified with some of the Gnostic beliefs, because a lot of what he's actually talked to us about and that I've witnessed him saying on other pages kind of, I don't know, jars with it. So go ahead, Tim.
Jars with the Gnostics?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, as much as I've read, I mean, I've read quite a bit. Well, you know, I mean, maybe not compared to some, but I guess I'd have to ask this. I don't think I would understand what view of Satan or what view of the devil did the Gnostics have? If you can answer that question for me.
Do you want to take this one, TC?
It's all yours, man. It was your question, so.
Okay, now correct me if I'm wrong, but if memory serves correct, I would say I believe that the Gnostics viewed the devil as a part of the whole. You know, the evil is a necessary part for man to develop, like in order to get to a higher knowledge.
Okay.
And not necessarily that one God is against the other, but two of them, like Lucifer. If I am correct, I'm not. You know, don't quote me on this, but if I'm mistaken, that the whole Satan thing. Satan being is still subservient to God in Gnostic beliefs, to a degree.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it is what dark pool. I think that you're accurate on it. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I say you just broke up. Whatever you just said, the beast just broke
up.
Yeah,
he basically said that that's also, you know, his understanding of it as well.
Okay, yeah, okay, no, I understand. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like, I don't know where I just read it. Somebody just gave me something to read on that. Or it was a neat little thing about using the devil or Satan as Mr. Slugworth in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That he was in, there to kind of, you know what I mean? He would come in when they got the golden ticket and he would kind of say, hey, if you steal this and give it to me, you know, I'll give you this. But he was really only in the employment of he was only testing the kids. It's kind of like going back to the Job thing. He was only testing because in the end, you know, here's Slugworth, and he was only testing you to see that you would do the good thing, and now you can have my chocolate factory. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, do I view it that way? No, I do view that. I do see it. I do understand the adversarial. I think it was one of the biggest arguments me and Jason King always had, was that, you know, that he always thought that I didn't see the adversarial. And no, I do see it. It's a matter of what do we emphasize? Do I emphasize what I would consider the bad? Or, you know, I mean, yes, I understand we're sexual beings, but I also see the issues inherent. And you talked about these beats about what happens when we take that to an extreme. The pendulum swings the other direction. You know what I mean? And so I also see what happens. Yes, I think that good and evil is a part of our lives. I do believe that. And I do believe that, you know, that if I look at it this way, yeah, I can see where the evil or Satan is my weight bench. And I, you know, and sometimes no pain, no gain. You know, that unless there's that resistance, unless there's all this, I'm not going to grow, I'm not going to do this. If it's God testing me, so be it. Let me pass the test. I'm not really concerned with heaven or hell anyway. You know, like I said, I kind of think I've gone past the point of this. I think I'm just a mercenary. I'm in his employment. Wherever he wants to send me, when I'm done, I'm done. Anyway, sorry.
No, it's fine. So could you actually answer as to whether or not you identify with the Gnostic belief system?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I identify with it? I say, yeah, I identify with a lot of systems. As far as, believe me, I mean, I identify with Dan to a certain degree. But, yeah, do I agree wholly with the Gnostic system of that? I'm not so sure I could say that I'm all sold on it.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with the Gnostic belief, if that answers. I'm sorry, man, I didn't realize I didn't even answer the question.
Well, that's fine. What I'm just trying to determine is what Tim is hardcore-ism really is. So I was just wondering. I mean, some of the things that I've noticed, like the way that you talk about things, you could just be literally taking the word Satan out of some sentence and plugging the word God into it, and it still works the same. You know what I mean? Vice versa. And I think that it works that way as well for everything else that is being discussed at that time as well. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting. I know that at some point here we are going to get you scheduled up here on a show. I don't know if you got the video or have heard yesterday's show or whatever, but as of last week, we now have someone who's actually organizing and taking care of all the scheduling of the shows for me. And so it's been a kind of a transition period. And now that it's kind of the waters are settling, I'll be able to get the scheduling I want done in a little bit more of advanced timing. So,
I didn't actually watch the video. I didn't get a chance to listen to the show yesterday, but I probably will hear it later. I'm one of those guys that watches it or listens to it later. But I did watch the video, though. So, yeah, I did get up all that.
Okay. So, yeah, excellent. Everything's starting to fall into place. We're getting ready to actually kind of increase the quality of this show all the way around. Over the next few weeks, you'll begin to see the show take a whole new shape. So it should be interesting. One of those things, of course, you're key in, and that is we're going to start holding guests that aren't necessarily have anything really relative to do with Satanism or the occult, but rather we're going to look at ideas themselves. We're going to look at people who maybe they champion a certain cause that's sympathetic to their idea system, if you know what I'm saying. So
yeah.
Anyway, blah blah blah. Yeah. Anything else on the one guy, current guys? We only got a few minutes left in the show, so
okay. Go ahead, Tim.
Oh no, I was just gonna say we could all sit around here now and sing Kumbaya.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna say that. Hey, one thing I did want to talk about is the scapegoating, the shifting of responsibility.
I thought we had kind of covered that, but do you have something we
didn't?
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah.
I did, but now I forgot it. So I guess I remembered it before, like it was right before Tim called, and then it's like, gone. But no, I mean, basically, I think we've covered a good portion on, you know, the against and the for. So I don't know. At this point, I think fundamentalism of any kind is something that, I mean, that's one thing that any religion can share, fundamentalism. And picking and choosing, you know, what to follow and what not to. And that's a dangerous thing altogether.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really have anything to say on that myself. If you do, Tim, you're welcome to it.
Not at this point, no.
Okay.
All right,
I realize it looks like the show's about over, so I can talk forever, so I don't really want to.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we got about 4 minutes left, and I think we pretty sufficiently covered this topic. And if we do, there's a future scheduling to get more into some intricate part of it that doesn't necessarily have to be focused on the overall whole of it. I really always kind of worry to myself when we put something out like this, that the negative connotation that we attach to it doesn't outweigh the fact that we do see some benefits that form within the ideas themselves. Like, not everything about it is undesirable, which is why I respect people like Tim who have held on to it and kind of morphed it to fit more in lines with a realistic worldview. So hats off to you for that, Tim.
Thank you.
That's it. That's all I've got to say. Anybody got anything they want to plug or anything, or should we just kill the show?
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Thanks for being called out.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Thanks. Talk to you guys later.
All right.
Take care, man.
All right, guys. I guess we're going to go ahead and close the show out. But before we do, I'm going to make mention that tomorrow night on the Outbreak Edition, we are going to be having a very, very serious discussion. The naysayers don't apply. So, if you don't agree with the basic starting premise, there's no purpose in even bothering to check it out or whatever. You can just skip over it. But if you'd really like to see some kind of group effort develop into a mutually beneficial situation, tomorrow night is the time to come out and talk to us about it. Again, the ooze is beginning to take a different direction, and that direction is going to be more active.
Current?
Active,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's what we've always been doing. It's just now giving it a focus. That's what we're aiming at. So with all that being said, I'm hoping that everybody that supports this show also supports the idea of being productive in their real life and using networking to develop themselves beyond where they are. So tomorrow night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Jason Sorrell and I, come check it out. And on that note, Matt, we're out of here.
All right, later on. See you tomorrow, folks.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but this is the old expression goes. Tough luck. Special thanks to Zadaraki Daroma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?